Welcome to the show. We're very proud to welcome our guest, Lauren Polly, author, speaker, life coach, healer extraordinaire, and hailing from the great state of a place called California.
California.
Welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, I'm happy to be here, Mark. Thanks for having me.
I'm thrilled to talk to you because, one, I feel like my soul is probably in California. It seems like all of the cool stuff always starts or is continued or progresses in California, hones their craft. And you certainly fall into that category, not just by, you know, your life story and the work that I encourage people to do in your book, which is very eye-opening and brave, very courageous, which is available on Amazon. Might as well plug that right now. The Other Side of Bipolar, which I guess describe the first time in life when you were given this diagnosis or your first awareness of, geez, I'm a teenage girl and I might be different.
Yeah. I think even growing up, I always felt different, but it was when we were little, it's kind of like an exploration and people could be different. Everything was included. Nothing was judged. We just kind of got together and played. And then of course, prepubescent hits like 13, 14, middle school horribleness, basically. It's a very intense time. And that's really the time where socially, maybe biologically even, you can maybe speak to that. We try to find the norm. We try to find how we fit. And it becomes less about being an individual and being more of the herd. And I really wasn't good with that. So I started to have more inner angst. On the surface, everything looked fine, but I was going through a lot of depression. My thoughts turned super dark. And then after a while, I think my hormones kind of kicked in and I started having massive mood fluctuations. So the ups and the downs, which is associated with the bipolar. So not just being depressed, but also kind of having this manic-y, kind of like intense, dark thoughts in my head and then acting out with hyperactivity. So my parents found a suicide letter when I was 14 at that time, got carted off to the psychiatrist and he heard my aunt had bipolar. And of course, it's supposed to be a family thing. It's in the biology. And then before I knew it, all the different symptoms that I was having, it just kind of got cataloged into this must be what you have. And here came the label. So it's not something I think is super unusual. The more people who read my book and the more people I coach and talk to, a lot of people end up that way. And a lot of people say, you know, I read your book. I had a lot of the same things, but I never ended up on the doctor's couch. So I never got a label for it. So I feel like some of the diagnostic processes are a bit interesting with the inclusion criteria of what wins you that label, you know? But
it's diplomatic of you to say it that way, because that's one thing I share with you is the labels have always bothered me. One, because I know the training and the science, and I realized a bunch of dead white guys sat around in a room and invented these diagnoses, and two, some of them are wildly unbiologic. You know, they're more like classification rubrics, and they're really kind of forced into it because the insurance industry, and you know, a little what we talked about before the show, we're kind of all on these various spectrums, whether that's, you know, emotional, genetic, physical, and labels kind of do classify you. But at the same time, you are the only Lauren Polly that ever was and ever will be. We all have unique biology. We all have unique development. We all have unique emotions, spirits, life experiences. That's one of the things you say is that's exactly our strength. And the label essentially takes that away. It might be useful for providers to communicate, but it's very harmful, especially to a teenage girl. You know, I have three daughters myself, to identify as a label and to learn the way that you did, to use that as your strength and realize that is your superpower, is really empowering. So I don't know that your book is that typical. You don't give yourself enough credit there. It really is impressive.
Thank you. Yeah, one of my last private clients, she was sweet. She said, you know, I was just diagnosed. She had been diagnosed with everything under the sun, but finally got diagnosed with bipolar. And she said, I was up on Amazon looking at all the different options. And she said, I was so happy that I read your book first because it didn't lead me into this is me forever. My identity will never change. And I feel like for me, that's the biggest message that I can put across is it's a moving target. We're moving malleable individuals. And it's kind of funny if you look at like the whole self-development industry, if we weren't capable of change, improvement, awakening, discovery, that wouldn't exist. So it's funny when you get a medical diagnosis, how quick we are to say, this is forever. It's never going to change. So she was just like, this was great because it opened up so many avenues that I could start to explore and not really use the information the doctor was giving, absolutely, but not take it as, this is who I am. And I feel like that's the crux point when it becomes part of your identity. So stiffly and rigidly that you can't progress or move or change. That's what I ended up in for years. And it was really hard being an energetic being who does move and change and create to hold yourself so stolid and so still that I feel like that in of itself creates a whole bunch of mental angst and upset.
Well, I feel like our medical model has done a terrific job at brainwashing our society, because that diagnosis is almost, it's almost worn like a badge of courage or honor to some people. But even if it's not that strong, they immediately accept it and swallow it. Like, well, oh, okay, I have psoriasis. My first question is why? Why? And no one ever asks why. And I think, and I'm speaking for yourself, but one of the interesting things about your story was what shifted you in a lot of ways was when you were 20 years old, right? And you met an integrated psychiatrist for the first time. One of my favorite things about integration of Eastern and Western or mind, body, and spirit is it asks why. It asks, you know, how is this come to fruition? How does it present itself? How does it offer me a glimpse into my own suffering, pain, trauma, past, but more importantly, healing as a result of it?
Yeah. And it's interesting because all of that is really the self-discovery or self-awareness journey that a lot of us are on. And I feel like in the medical model, that's missing completely. And it's only when you like, I it was a blessing for me. And you know, this was what, 23 years ago, I was flipping through the yellow pages in Orlando, Florida.
I
And I
heard Florida. I'm
it
so
was Orlando,
jealous.
Florida. But I was flipping through because I had just moved to the area. First thing on my to-do list, I have to find a new psychiatrist, right? And there was just page after page, and there was a huge, like, green outline on this one ad, and it said holistic psychiatry. And back then, that wasn't a buzzword, and I didn't know what it meant. I just knew that's what I need. And at 20, to have that gut instinct, that's the awareness most of us have. We know what's going to work for us. We know how to heal ourselves. We just don't listen to that inner voice, that bigger kind of sense of energy that draws you closer to it. But I was smart. I didn't know why I called him, but it changed the trajectory of my care. Absolutely.
Well, there's another thing, and I'm going to read this and for along the lines of you being smart, because I'm really stunned you wrote this early in the pandemic, and I'm literally going to read this because it's so good. We are living in a great time of change between the pandemic, civil unrest, and polarized everything. It's easy to just sit on the sidelines and see how things will play out. Many are doing just that. They're wasting a huge opportunity. Now, more than ever, there's an opening to keep the things of the past or to lose them. It is a perfect time to take stock of your life, reprioritize, begin to create a new path forward for yourself, if you so choose. That resonated very, very strongly with me because, like we were talking before the show, I feel like society or this part of the country is really ripe and ready for that, and is actually feeling that because the old ties have been cut to old ways. This was before we even came up with the language of the great resignation or the great reset or quiet quitting or You know, none of those were really kind of in the colloquial world. You were talking about this pretty darn early in the pandemic, which really stunned me because I was still trying to figure out what was going on with us as in our collective unconscious. And that's what we got to solve today. That's kind of the goal of two of your area of expertise. One, how to reinvent your life, knowing why you need to, what's wrong with it, how to do it, and what it's going to look like. And part two of that is how do we stay positive during the pandemic through the fear and facing a future that we want to manifest for ourselves and what makes us uniquely qualified to be the driver's seat of our life.
Yeah. You know, and as soon as you say that, it's what pops for me is not to allow yourself to be distracted. And one of the very first tools I started using during the pandemic, and I work in a hospital, I manage a department, I was on the front lines the entire time. One of the very first tools I used was reminding myself, do not get lost in other people's arguments. Because all I saw around me was people arguing for this way or that way. And not that that doesn't go along all the time, because it does. It just is more pronounced during the pandemic. And I feel like the polarization is even more prominent now, kind of like it shook it loose, you know? But for me, that was such a big thing of like, don't let yourself get lost in other people's arguments. You don't have to participate in that conversation if it's not creative or nurturing to you. And I feel like this whole staying positive conversation is so important all the time. Right now, there's just more of an opening because of the way the world is. It's do or die with it, really. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to move forward or we're not, you know. But being able to stay positive during that, you really need a sense of hope. And it's really hard to have that sense of hope for you if you're listening and allowing yourself to either get distracted by other people's stuff, or allowing the narrative of your life to be dictated from outside sources. You know, I was obsessed with watching the news at the beginning, and then I started seeing some of the news feeds, and, you know, working in a hospital, I could tell, oh, you're just doing scare tactics. Mm-hmm. That's all this is. And I was like, I had one episode I was watching where they did that, and I went, oh, turn it off, done. And so pretty early on, I stopped allowing myself to be distracted, but I kind of had to do that at the beginning of my mental health journey, because the more I paid attention to other people, the more I lost myself as an empath, as a healer, as someone who's very sensitive and connected. That's very easy to do. And so if you look globally at where we are right now, getting lost in that is super easy. I'd say step number one, don't get lost in other people's stuff. Don't get distracted. Don't allow yourself to be fed that way. And you really have to look for yourself of what do you want to feed yourself energetically, you know, being soul spirit wise.
Yeah. On one hand, we've got tons of distractions. We've got tons of fears. I mean, it really was omnipresent. Whether that's just because everywhere you go, there's a TV or there's a proverbial Karen, or, you know, if you believe in the collective unconscious, which I certainly do, even Tom Hanks and Wilson on the deserted island are going, geez, I feel anxious. And they don't have access to TV or iPhones or anything like that. So it still is very real. It's still very palpable. But you are fighting a lot of things, people, and people haven't really used them as excuses. I just like to draw attention and awareness to it, that not only like access to care and the zeitgeist of the pandemic era and all of the interpersonal political and all the geopolitical, but you really kind of need to take a stock of yourself and realize, look, I'm living in trauma and I'm a human. When I stress, I regress to more primitive coping skills like most people. I think that's why what you wrote was so ahead of its time and early on in the pandemic, because I don't think people were still at the crash recoil phase. They weren't at the pull over and to take their emotional vital signs. And I feel like we're at that now. Most people have learned, you know what, I'm turning the TV off and I can't take any more of this, or, hey, I'm going to move to Florida where they don't make me wear a mask, or whatever it was. People did compensate. The Great Reset, was, what do I really want professionally? I've had this gift of a pause because COVID shut down the world or whatever. So we're at this contemplative place where we're not paralyzed with fear anymore. We're sort of like after they freed the concentration camps, we're opening our eyes, looking around. And to your point about avoiding the distractions, it's also a perfect time to learn how to look inward and discover what are your strengths and who are you and what is your passion? What fulfills you? What sustains you? What's it going to take to feed the good wolf inside you? And to learn how to be positive, to learn how to be the calm in the center of the storm of your life, family, neighborhood, career, job, whatever. That's on you. You've got to explain to the world how to do that.
Yeah. And it's so interesting too, because that basically it's a redirect is how I look at it. And if you can look at it either as a redirect or kind of like a pattern interrupt, you know, we all get into a pattern, we hear something and it triggers us. And before we know it, our mind goes a certain place, our behavior or demeanor changes. We're just, we're plugged in. It's like an automatic switch has gone off that you have no choice, really. You've just kind of had your button flipped and off you go. So being really aware of what triggers you and kind of being on the lookout for that, and then being able to employ this redirect or this pattern interrupt. I've got tons of different tools I use for that. One really is just adding a sense of space before that button gets hit. And I think because we are living in such a distracted, intense time, but we're also living in such a fast time too. Mm-hmm. Everybody has to be productive, like 100% of the time at their job. They have to be scheduled nonstop. There's such this rush to act that we don't ever have that space to go, is that action really in line with what I would like? You know, I just read a great book. I'm going to forget the name of it. It's sitting over there. Something about habits. I can't remember. I'll have to look it up. But he was talking about every behavior that you, choose to engage with, or every action you take should be a vote for the kind of person you want to become. And to stay positive and to move in the direction of hope, which is pretty much what positivity is, it may get better. It hopefully will get better. That's the driving force. For me, the secondary energy of vulnerability and softness needs to be there. It includes a sense of space. So you're not rushed. You're not in reaction. But it also brings in these beautiful things of being honest with yourself, being vulnerable enough to know this doesn't work for me anymore. Or, hey, I have this thing that I would love to create. But being brave enough to be vulnerable and admit that first to yourself, let alone put that out in the world, it's tricky for a lot of us. So adding that sense of space, being able to hit the pause button, you know, at the hospital, we call it stop, challenge, choose. Stop yourself before you speak, challenge your perspective, and then make a choice based on the awareness you got. Energetically, with some of the tools that I've studied, it's way more about stopping and taking a breath. Feeling your feet for a second, just so you're grounded. You've got a second of space before you actually act. It kind of brings in that yoga perspective of being more the observer versus the actor in that moment. And then really being able to ask a question in that moment.
Because a question to yourself,
questions always open up a sense of space. And I learned this first through a system called Access Consciousness, which are practical tools to use kind of in any circumstance, but they're really big on the question open space where a conclusion or an answer contracts it. So if I'm triggered by something and I react, I speak, I move really quickly, I don't stop, I don't ask a question, all I'm doing is grooving in the same behaviors. My life will not change, period.
And that concept of space, that's more than just like temporal space, pausing.
It's a sense. It's energetic space.
Yes, definitely energetic space. What about physical space?
Physical space is amazing. And when I first started playing with a lot of these tools, I had a really hard time because I'm very sensitive. I got triggered by a lot of different things. And it was really hard for me. I've always gotten lost in other people, what they wanted, what they needed from me, what they projected on me. It felt more important to live up to their expectations than to really look for myself of what I wanted. The physical space actually really makes a difference. Like I would go on dates and I'd be sitting at the table and there'd be all these emotions and energies. And I would just keep excusing myself to go to the bathroom because I just needed some sort of physical space from the person I was dealing with. It can be super, super practical, you know, going on a hike and looking at an open vista, because if you get, your eyes get to expand, your energy and your mind expands as well. Taking a 5-minute pause before you blow up at somebody. All of these things can actually create that sense of space so that things move a little slower in your awareness, so you don't feel the need to get pushed into reactive patterns.
And that's probably one of the worser things during the last 3 years, and this whole concept of space. I think everyone can relate to that, to feeling not only physically, energetically, existentially cramped, locked, paralyzed. But change happens when the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of change. And I think that we're there as a society. We're really on this precipice where people are ripe and ready to learn how to reverse this contraction of space and learn how to open back up at least to where they were before the pandemic. But I think it's going to be much greater, especially when the self-discovery, self-awareness piece, self-confidence, positivity is programmed in along with it. I'm really hopeful for the future in that regard.
Yeah, and see, that's the beautiful thing. And I think it's really hard, again, to get distracted or to get lost in the drama of it all, as opposed to really looking at what are the hopeful moments in the day. I was just talking to my friend who's going through a lot of intensity right now. There's a lot of stuff going on in her life. And she was talking about making deliveries yesterday. She is a delivery person and someone gave her a free cupcake. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it was just such this beautiful moment of sweetness and someone giving her something and her receiving it. And she blew right by it. I'm like, you know, you spent about, you know, 20, 30 minutes so far complaining about all this other stuff. And it's like, here's this moment of absolute sweetness. And like, what does it take to just put your perspective there and really moment by moment, actually developing that? When you start recognizing moments of space, moments of openness, moments of sweetness in your life, more starts to come because you're starting to put your energy towards that. And it might seem right now, depending on what your personal circumstances are, where you don't have a lot of that. But even like one simple thing, like receiving a cupcake, it seems so simple, but it brought such a joy to her and a smile on her face. So it's part of this redirecting. We're programmed to really look at the negative and to solve a problem. And so this positive and trying times, a lot of people, what they do is, let me find the problem and let me try with my head to figure out how to solve it, as opposed to actually looking at what's actually working right now. What gives me a sense of space and peace and pleasure? My goodness, pleasure, heaven forbid. And actually choosing that. You know?
How do you think your work has changed during the pandemic? Because of the unique challenges in the way that it's affected people's mental health. How have you seen your work change? Because in my career, it's been unlike anything I've ever seen. Yeah, I still don't understand that.
There's been a lot of people who I feel like who are a little bit more triggered than typical. And that was kind of early on, I would say. I've actually been getting a lot more hits and clients and interviews even about creation. And I think it speaks to where we are right now in this time where people are kind of waking up and coming out of it of like, oh, I still have a life to lead. And kind of the last 3 years, 2 years, 3 years felt like a time suck, you know, it's like now I'm 3 years older, you know, and it's very easy to kind of look in the future and be like, well, if I don't actually make changes now, I'm going to just waste another 4 or 5 years, 10 years even. So there are a lot of people who are asking more questions around what they can create in their life. So yes, there's been this more angstiness where they've been a little bit more triggered. The anxiety is a little bit on a higher scale, or I know I'm tapped into the collective, but I still can't get some space, even though I know that. So there's been like that kind of first aid kit needed, but a lot of them deep down, that angst is them knowing my life the way it wasn't really working for me. This has really brought that to the forefront of my attention. Now I'm really ready to do something different, you know?
And I think that's one of the gifts of the pandemic, or what I call, you know, the silver lining of that dark cloud, is that pause gave people a moment to have a different perspective on things. And it's part of why there's really, it was a big demarcation point in our history, because not only in terms of its effect on body counts and physical and mental health, but just the economic and work aspect of it. So many people going into different careers, realizing I don't want to do this job anymore. Kind of reminds me of like the psychic shift after a near-death experience. This was such a deep shared trauma. It really caused people to reevaluate or question, which was the pause that you were talking about. It was just hard when it was overlaid, when they're trying to open that space, but there are so many crushing external factors closing their space and coming out of it now. Is really a perfect timing and a great opportunity that, dare I say, we wouldn't have had we not been through this type of shared trauma.
Yeah. And I mean, that's kind of like, you look back through history, the biggest shakeups were wakeups, you know? And so what would it take for this shakeup to be a wake up for you? It's just the trick of waking up tomorrow and being like, where do I begin with that? You know? But if you can kind of start with these basic tools of really looking for those moments of space in your day, looking for moments of hope where something feels lighter in your space. And then also really those moments of honesty, again, that vulnerability. A lot of us, it's a confronting thing to really look at everything you've been investing in up until this moment in your life and be like, you know what? I need a total rewrite. Or a big part of my life, I'm like, I really need to shed some things whilst I create, you know? One of my mentors, he was talking about being open to new life stories. And I love the way he phrased that, because it's non-confrontational. You don't have to change something. It's not very dramatic, but allowing yourself to be open to a new life story or different storylines coming into your space, just opening the door to that may actually be a soft, easy way to initiate this process.
Well, and I really like what you're talking about, spaces and opening, because it really applies to every area. And one of the ingredients that's needed for this recipe of repair and growth and healing, because back to the labels thing, that's a reduction in space. That's a reduction in your identity. And it's hard to retrain people against the status quo model of, well, no, you've got bipolar, or you've got this disease, or you've got this personality. How do you encourage people, whether that's through your work with the neuroemotional divergent population, to discover their power, to discover their strength, to say, you know what, you're uniquely you makes you the best qualified person to manage your life and fulfill your destiny and to get the most out of Earth School.
Yeah. Super practical exercise to start that. Make a list of everything that you've been judged for.
By
anybody, by yourself, okay. You know? And it's interesting the way I've worked with this with other people. One lady, she was always made wrong when she was a child because she would talk all the time during class. And now she's a podcast host because she's discovered that she loves to chat and she also loves to make people shine. And so asking people questions, hearing their stories was just something that lit her up. And then I had another girl who has more kind of an OCD thing. She got a job at this like holistic whole food plant or whatever. She's their safety and health officer. Plants never been cleaner. You know what I mean? And it's just interesting because these are the things that normally people would be like, that's wrong. Stop talking. That's wrong. Don't be so obsessed with cleanliness. my own personal story, I was always an empathic caregiver, taking everybody else's stuff on. I was told, don't go into a people-based profession. You won't be able to handle it. All through my adolescence, I was told that. I'm a medical speech pathologist. I've been working for 16 years in the ICU. Talk about intensive caregiving. These things are so interesting where what you've been judged for, if you take it and you take the judgment away and you start to look at, how does it bring me joy? How does it bring me hope, a sense of space? Again, being honest with yourself, you may discover skill sets that then you could apply to life creation, job, relationships, hobbies, whatever. So I work a lot with that and like neurodivergence with their autism and ADHD. A lot of times it's because they can see things other people can't. Mm-hmm. And their focus gets hijacked by it sometimes. But if they can figure out a way to work with it where that awareness can be there and they can actually employ it, that's huge in the tech industry. It's huge in any kind of innovative field. It's just kind of a fascinating thing to me where sometimes the things that were made the most wrong are like a liability. Like for me, label who's going to throw you over the edge, even if you don't have a medical label, I'm sure someone's judged you at some point. I can guarantee it, you know? No, never, right?
Luckily, my sociopathy prevents me from being harmed by that.
You're like, never mind. Yeah.
We judge ourselves. One of the biggest critic is our own inner voice, that whether that's the fear and the self-limiting or...
And so an interesting way to work with that, because absolutely, it's always worse in our head than what, you know, other people usually do. Look at where you've judged yourself based on someone else's reaction. And sometimes this can trace back to childhood, like itty bitty stuff, you know what I mean? Where you were doing something that was really joyful and open to you, but it wasn't received by the other person. They took it the wrong way. They didn't like it, whatever. And how often did you shut yourself down from that skill set, ability, energy? I mean, it can be a bunch of different things. So this kind of deep discovery work, just, I like the practicality of writing a list and then having something to work from. It breaks it down to make it easy enough where it's not an overwhelming task to do. But taking like liability into asset, that's a really good way to start.
Yeah. And realizing your difference is your strength. It is your superpower. And keeping it simple to me is not only critical from a pragmatic approach, because people literally like need to take baby steps right now because they're just walking out of the proverbial camps and frozen like a deer in headlights emotionally. Regular people are telling me all the time, you know, when I go to the grocery store, I'm overstimulated because they've been so, you know, touch phobic, touch starved, socially isolated and all of that. So your simple steps are actually really, really powerful tools and very low hanging fruit, because the ache and the fear and the hopelessness and the despair and all of this negativity that people have been unconsciously focusing on and reacting to things that happen to them are really powerful. Like your cupcake is a beautiful analogy. I have very similar discussions with patients all the time. You know, hey, the world's out there right now. It's just you and me and our digital projections of ourself in cyberspace.
It's interesting. One of the things that pops when you talk about that is, and something I ask a lot, like, universe, put me in the path of possibilities. And like, it's up to me sometimes to put myself in that path as well. It's like, you know, I remember when I was 20, a bunch of my single girlfriends and I were hanging out, and it's like, everybody wanted to meet a man, but everybody was spending all their time on their sofa in front of the TV.
Now they're like, spending on the phone.
I know, seriously. So it's kind of funny, like what we do, like these degrees of separation where it's like, you know, you want something different. You may actually know what that different thing is, but you have to put yourself in the way of possibilities. You got to go outside your comfort zone. If you don't, you won't get there. If you're an entrepreneur or building a business and you're not making the steps to kind of take action on what you want, you're never going to get more awareness if you actually want that thing or not, you know? So it takes action. It actually takes you putting one foot in front of the other, which again, it can be quite scary, but you have to have that sense of hope and positivity that things may actually work out. Very few things, I think, when you look at the timeline of your life, not like maybe in a day or a month, but if you look at like years and years or decades and decades, there aren't many things that devolve.
Mm-hmm.
Everything actually is an evolution, even the yucky stuff, because it actually catalyzes this growth. And so that's another space trick, by the way, of taking you out of like a very linear timeline, one day, bad day, and instead really looking at the global whole and being like, you know what, that's actually true. No matter what I've chosen, things have continued to evolve, ups and downs. Yeah. That may take some of the fear factor away of trying something different.
Yeah. And I mean, probably the easiest place to start for most people is to stop making it worse. So when you find yourself in a hole, set down the shovel and then asking yourself, am I going to make the choice? And then you start with the baby steps. And you could build on that to ideally get to a point where you're developing self-love, but you're becoming a beacon of hope for the people around you. You know, you're exuding that energy, and people are so hungry for that when they get it, when they take the literal time to stop and smell the proverbial roses, or to appreciate and honor that small memento, that gift of a cupcake, they can derive a lot of power and positivity and hope and optimism that's just going to self-sustain and kind of flourish outwards from there.
It feeds you. You know what I mean? Like when you talk about like refilling your tank, you really have to look at what those activities are. But next time you're walking down the street and you actually make eye contact with someone and smile, look what happens to them. And then look what happens to you. And it's so funny because it's such a tiny little thing. It doesn't take anything to like make eye contact and smile, right? So sometimes we think these big things are needed. Like I have to change jobs. I have to quit my career.
You know, when you're spouse or...
all the things, you know, I got to get divorced. Like there's just, so we go to the over dramatic where we don't go in these nano microseconds of change. And really life is a series of moments. And then eventually you'll die and you'll stop having moments. You're going to move on to the next realm. So if you look at life as a collection of energetic touch points, sweetness, like whatever you want your life to be, putting your focus there and actually being present for it, adding enough space so that you're not on autopilot and miss those things, that's the key, at least for me. For me, that just fills my tank like nothing else. So I don't get lost in, I wish I had this.
I think
it's way more look what I do have.
It's a key for all of us though right now, because we are sharing the same trauma here. I always said if aliens invaded like Independence Day, the humans would all unite and kick them aliens' ass. Not only did the alien called COVID invade us, we didn't unite. We turned on each other. We looked at each other like, you know, fomites. And if I make eye contact with you, you might kill my grandmother. And the war's over. We can punch out now. And this is very exciting. And, you know, your book is really a terrific story of hope, not only as an autobiographical way, it's impressive, but just the lessons that you learned and the tools that you employed and the person that you've become and the attitude and the work is really a noble path in my assessment. And we're positioned to hopefully infect people with that hope and with that optimism so that we can all move on and heal and live to our highest potential for the greatest good.
And we're all different. You know what I mean? To your point, I'm the only Lauren Polly. You're not going to do it like me. You don't have to, you know, that's why these like healing things where you're like check box A and box B and you'll get C as a result. It doesn't work for a person, really. I mean, we're so unique and we're so multifaceted that for me, what I always teach is you need a big box of tools, and what's going to work for you in one moment may not work the next because you're a different person then. So really this education, the self-evolution, you got to start learning how to love the journey and appreciating those moments, because that's really where life happens. not some end result of eventually I'm going to be mentally well. And you know what I mean? Like, I got stuck in that for years. That's the lie with the mental health paradigm, is eventually you're going to reach some kind of holy grail where everything is going to be sunshine and roses and perfect. It's not, it's life. It's going to go up and down, but there's beauty in that. And if you can learn to enjoy the journey, not just tolerate it.
Yeah, to thrive in it, yeah. And in the power of now. And that's really all we truly have. Like John Lennon says, you know, life is what happens when you're busy making other plans. In this case, when we're busy distracting ourselves with fear and uncertainty and
busyness.
So I so appreciate your time and coming and talking about this. I think it's so critical. I was so excited that you agreed to do this. I want you counsel people and do life coaching all over the country. So I want people to go check you out at laurenpolly.com. Take some time and really learn the tools from you and get started on a new way of life and a new path for healing.
Yeah, it's possible for all of us, not just me, you know?
Yeah. Even me? Me too?
Even you too. Yes, everybody, everybody. If you're going to take another breath, you got another moment to make a different choice. So you just have to look at it that way, you know?
That's exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to write that on my hand. That's my baby step. Thank you so much for being here.
That was awesome, Mark. Thank you.
All right, Lauren Polly again, check it out. I'm going to put the link below. And please, Amazon.com, read her book, The Other Side of Bipolar. It's a baby step. It's a great place to start. Until next time, be well. That's all I got.
Until then,
be well.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.